Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with this article. It's under the banner of Piatt County. The headline reads, Wind Turbine Pros and Cons Debated at Zoning Board. Apex Clean Energy has yet to officially file the necessary zoning applications for its proposed Goose Creek wind development, but those on both sides of the wind energy issue are already lining up their cases. That was evident during last week's Piatt County Zoning Board of Appeals meeting. A main purpose of the session was to review text amendments to the county's wind energy conversion ordinance. Moved to one of the courtrooms due to the large crowd in attendance, the January 23rd session quickly became a trial on the pros and cons of wind turbines in general. Some testified that turbines are safe, produce clean energy, and provide an economic boost where they are located. Others did not like the idea of turbines near their homes, particularly the noise they generate. For John Jordan of Mansfield, he felt allowing farmers to lease some of their land to wind developers would diversify the use of their property. I know you guys are concerned about prime farmland, but I haven't heard a farmer in Piatt County that hasn't complained about not making money. Maybe we don't need so much prime farmland, said Jordan. Piatt County resident and ecologist Amanda Pankow urged the county to encourage renewable energy, saying that there is a lot of misinformation about windmills, such as the claim they cost more energy to create than they save. After quoting a National Renewable Energy Lab study that estimated wind turbines produce 99% less of carbon dioxide per unit of energy than coal, she asked the ZBA to allow us to move away from dirty energy sources that are, for years have polluted our water and our air. On the other side was Dave Oliger, who felt a 50 decibel noise limit being discussed in the county code is not livable. The noise level at my house now is 25 decibels. Citing a study done on wind farm noises, noise consultant Mike Hancard did point out that noise is usually measured in decibels, which has an exponential impact when increased. For example, a 10 dB increase doubles the amount of noise. But he felt the state's noise code, which he called one of the most stringent in the nation, protects citizens with a 46 dB limit in a home when it comes to wind turbine noise. You are adequately protected by the Illinois Pollution Control Board, said Hancard, noting the state standards exceed the local ones, should they be approved. I think that the science on the matter is reasonably clear that if you keep wind turbine noise levels down in that mid-40s, there's no demonstrated health impact, he added. Ted Hartke disagreed, saying it is the lower bandwidth noise that not always covered by IPCB standards that contributed to sleep issues for his family in their home that bordered windmills in Vermilion County. His family eventually moved from that property. Is it reasonable to let children sleep inside their home? Was one question he asked Hankard. Others said economic factors should swing the county in favor of the wind farm. Apex is planning 120 turbines in northern Piatt County and estimate it would generate $65 million in tax revenue for county governments over 30 years. Illinois State University economy professor David Loomis estimated the Goose Creek project, as currently proposed, would feature a $400 million investment in the county, with the creation of 339 jobs during construction and 35 permanent jobs. This is a great opportunity in terms of economic development for counties like Piatt County, he said. Barbara Lamont, a township assessor in Macon County, said the county there receives about $3 million in revenue annually from wind companies. With the Piatt County budget deficit that I've seen from the November meeting, it would be silly not to, because I don't see any businesses that would bring in that volume of tax revenue to the county that this would bring, she said. Appraiser Mike Maruz said that he has talked to 100 assessors in areas where there are wind turbines and told the ZBA that my conclusion is there are no negative impacts on real estate values. Hartke responded that a Vermilion County assessor told one of his neighbors that a $20,000 loss in their property's value could be attributed to the advent of windmills there. ZBA members discussed proposed changes in the wind energy conversion ordinance, including setbacks. The original document approved by the ZBA last year stated that all towers should be set back a distance of 3.75 times the tower tip height, or 1,600 feet, whichever is greater, from adjacent property lines. An amendment could lower that to 1.1 times the tower tip height, or 1,600 feet, which Apex spokesman Aaron Baker said is likely needed in order for the project to proceed. Larger setbacks could make it difficult to have enough land available, she said, adding that 3.75 times the tip height could be prohibitive, especially with towers becoming taller all the time. What we ask as you deliberate your ordinance is that we get an ordinance in place that has sufficient guardrails to protect for the safety of your community, added Baker. Yes, absolutely, that is our goal too, but that it gives us the regulatory certainty that we need to know that we can move on and get to work. Right now, that's uncertain for us. Testimony on the wind ordinance was halted after about 2.5 hours and will pick up again at next month's Zoning Board of Appeals meeting at 1 p.m. Thursday, February 27th. And under the heading of other speakers, others who spoke to the board during the wind ordinance discussion included Travis Herman of Rural Deland, who asked if there had been any consideration on establishing setbacks that would protect existing drainage patterns and tiles. Louis Wozniak, a former University of Illinois professor who described wind energy as excellent as a supplement. Ron Weishar of Cisco, who said he uses solar panels at his home and felt Apex treated their landowners and community at their wind farm in the Hoopston area very reasonably. I think that speaks volumes. And Jonathan Rogers, who performed an ice shed risk assessment and said there was only a tiny, tiny chance that ice shed from turbine blades would hit a home. Our next article on the front page is under the banner of Piatt County, and the headline reads, Cannabis Grower Permit Endorsed. What could be the first legal cannabis grower in Piatt County was given the go-ahead by the Piatt County Zoning Board of Appeals on Thursday, January 23rd. The ZBA voted 5-0 to endorse a special use permit for Joshua Cothran and Ronald Falk to erect an indoor cannabis craft grower facility on land located at Piatt County 1884 North 600 East Road, about 4 miles northwest of Monticello. Building plans are not complete, but the ZBA indicated the indoor farm would take up about 5 acres of a 37.36 plat of land that is zoned A1 agriculture. Cothran said a craft grower includes those producing smaller quantities, less than the 210,000 square feet needed to be in the commercial cultivation category. In contrast, he said there would be about 5,000 square feet of indoor growing space at the proposed Piatt County facility, which would raise and process crops for sale at dispensaries elsewhere. In comparison, the commercial operation is more like a Budweiser, whereas what we would be doing would be more like the Monarch Brewery, said Cothran, comparing his operation to the smaller amounts of beer produced at the local brew pub. Neighbor Sandra Mason expressed concern the facility could affect their water supply, which they get from a shallow 65-foot deep bored containment well. We're actually in an area that doesn't recharge very quickly, and so if this draws down even more, we are concerned about it, said Mason, adding they needed to extend the well after a drought to get enough water to their home. Cawthron estimated the facility would use about 1,000 gallons of water a day, but that his goal was to reclaim as much water as possible. We intend to have a semi-sealed facility, and the idea there is a dehumidification system where we recapture the water that we use, he noted. We plan to recycle 80 to 90% of our water. The ZBA included a condition that the applicant conduct water table tests and make sure the operation would not affect the water supply of adjacent neighbors. Cawthron said he would consider building the parking lot in a way to capture rainwater as a way to reduce the amount of water that would need to be pumped. A small water tank could also be constructed to capture rainwater. Two additional approvals are needed in order for construction to begin. The Piatt County Board will consider the conditional use permit for final approval at its February 12th meeting, and the state needs to grant it a license with the next round of approvals slated for this March. If approved by the state, the local business would initially be authorized 5,000 square feet of growing space. That amount could be increased in 3,000 square foot increments up to a maximum of 14,000 square feet. ZBA Chairman Lloyd Wax asked if there would be heavy truck traffic at the facility. He was told it would not, that the largest vehicles after construction would be similar to Amazon delivery vans. Loading and unloading would occur indoors. Cawthron said the business would employ about 15 to 20 people. And in other action, the ZBA also approved two other actions, a special use permit for grain storage facilities near Mansfield, and a variation to allow a single-family home to be constructed on a 9.04-acre parcel of land near Monticello. Plunk Brothers Incorporated applied for the permit in order to exceed the county's 45-foot height limit to add grain storage facilities to its operation at 2870 North 1200 East Road in Mansfield. The height is required simply for the grain leg, said Luke Feeney, the attorney representing Plunk Brothers. It already has grain bins on it. We're not changing the character of it at all. The grain storage facilities reside on a 6.9-acre parcel of land. Also approved was a home construction for Angie Norman at 306 East 1220 North Road. A variance is needed when homes are built on less than 20 acres of agriculturally zoned land. Both of those actions also need county board approval for the permit and variance to go into effect. And finally, from the front page, we have this article. It's under the banner of Monticello Schools, and the headline reads, Middle School Teacher Up for Golden Apple Award. Monticello Middle School science teacher Jennifer Smith is one of 30 finalists for the annual Golden Apple Award given out to state instructors every year. Golden Apple, a Illinois nonprofit committed to preparing, honoring, and supporting great educators who advance educational opportunities for students, last week announced the 2020 finalists for the prestigious Golden Apple Awards for Excellence in Teaching. Following a highly competitive process, 30 educators were selected as finalists for the award. With just 4% of a record-setting 732 nominations received from 64 counties in Illinois. Now, more than ever, it is essential to shine the light on the transformational role outstanding teachers play in the future success of Illinois and our nation. Without exceptional teachers, we cannot prepare our students to thrive in the workforce of tomorrow, said Alan Mather, president of Golden Apple. The positive impact these finalists for the Golden Apple Awards for Excellence in Teaching make on their students, schools, and communities is significant beyond measure, and we take great pride in recognizing their tremendous value, added Mather. Smith was also one of 12 finalists for the Illinois State Board of Education Teacher of the Year in 2015. The Golden Apple Award for Excellence in Teaching honors outstanding teachers for their roles in having lasting positive effects on students' lives and school communities. Teacher finalists demonstrate in their teaching and results significant positive impact on their students' growth and learning. Fellow educators, students, parents, and community members nominate teachers for the awards. Teachers may not self-nominate. There are a few individuals in the state who contribute more to the collective success of our communities than teachers, said Golden Apple CEO Alicia Winkler. With the growing shortage of educators in Illinois, it is critical that we elevate recognition of teachers like the finalists announced today and the importance of the teaching profession, she added. Each of these educators serves as a powerful example of the outsized impact one person can have when they are dedicated and committed to excellence. In raising awareness of their accomplishments, we seek to inspire others to follow in their footsteps. Award recipients are selected by master educators who understand and recognize instructional best practices and who utilize professional standards to evaluate exemplary teachers and school leaders. Members of the selection committee viewed video evidence of instruction and will observe finalists teaching in person in their classrooms, a comprehensive day which includes direct observation of in-classroom teaching accompanied by interviewing finalists, colleagues, school leaders, students, parents, and community members. Award finalists will be honored on Saturday, February 22nd at the Golden Apple Celebration of Excellence in Teaching and Leadership at the Q Center in St. Charles. Event details and tickets are available at www.goldenapple.org/celebration. The 2020 Golden Apple Award recipients will be notified in the spring with surprise visits at their schools. Northwestern University, Golden Apple's partner for more than 30 years, generously provides a spring sabbatical to award recipients at no cost. In addition, each Golden Apple Award for Excellence in Teaching recipient receives a $5,000 cash award. Award recipients also become fellows of the Golden Apple Academy of Educators, a community of educators who support current and future teachers and deepen the learning of students. Fellows play an important role in preparing the next generation of teachers by providing instruction and mentorship to future teachers in the Golden Apple Scholars and Accelerators program, programs dedicated to addressing the teacher shortage in Illinois. In honoring and developing K-12 teachers, Northwestern University and the Golden Apple Foundation are committed to improving teaching, learning, and the lives of students across the state of Illinois, said Timothy Dorer, Ph.D., Director of the Master of Science in Education Program at Northwestern University's School of Education and Social Policy. Over the coming weeks, Golden Apple's social media channels will feature each of the 30 finalists and the announcements of the final 10 award recipients. Golden Apple's mission is to inspire, develop, and support teacher and school leader excellence in Illinois, especially in schools of need. Our leading-edge preparation delivers exceptional teachers who make an impact. We help students thrive in the classroom and in life. Since our beginning, we have recognized master educators annually, and these master educators help prepare the next generation of teachers. Our vision is an Illinois in which every classroom has a great teacher, and to realize this, we are committed to making a material difference in resolving the teacher shortage throughout Illinois. Visit http://www.goldenapple.org for more information. And now on page A3 under obituaries, we have just one death notice as that is of local and area interest. James H. Schaefer, 79, of Whiteheath, passed away at 7:32 p.m. January 19, 2020 at the Kirby Medical Center in Monticello. A memorial service was held at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 25, 2020, at the Christ Lutheran Church in Monticello, with Pastor Julia Rademacher officiating. A visitation was held at the church for 1 hour prior to the service. And now returning to the news and views on page A3, under the Village of Cerro Gordo banner, we have this article headlined, Drainage Projects Proposed in Cerro Gordo. Soon the Village of Cerro Gordo will be pursuing yet another drainage project, but until that big project begins, Village President Tim Allen suggested three individual sites that need work as soon as possible. The three sites are the intersection of Jefferson and South Street, the intersection of Jefferson and Meadow, and a spot off of Franklin Street in front of Tom Hyde's house. The board received two bids for the work, one from S&S Construction and the other from Burdick Plumbing and Heating. Allen stated, one, this is the one that needs to be done first, Jefferson and South Street corner. It always floods there. I would say the next step would be to put culverts in them driveways and make a ditch there. That's a quote. Hyde needs a new whistle, which the board decided Mark could do. Martin stated, actually, Mark can do that job on Tom's. He has the equipment, the backhoe, and the whistle would be the cost. Can probably do it in 2 hours, Allen added. Tom has been complaining about that since I've been on the board, and it's an easy fix. It should be done, and it runs out into the intersection, and it's a highly traveled road. Trustee Beth Medlin noted that while the village has worked on multiple water issues, the problems are ongoing. The board approved Burdick Plumbing for the drainage work on the corner of Jefferson and South Street and plan on using them as well for Jefferson and Meadow. Mark will complete the work needed in front of Hyde's residence. The projects in total will be more than likely under and around $25,000. For the next major water project, the village is using funding made available through the IEPA loan. As previously discussed, the loan functions a lot like a grant in that the village will receive help for 60% of the cost. Engineer Tom Overmeyer of Fair and Graham was present to update the board. We're working on the topographic surveys. You've probably seen surveyors in town, not sure exactly how much more they have to do, but should be close to getting wrapped up soon, he said. They will use the surveys and drawings like they did on the previous water project. Overmeyer stated that by the next meeting, the design part of the project should be presented. The hope is to go out for bids by June 1st. The next section is under the heading of Zoning Board Recommendations. After some debate months ago and reviewing the zoning board recommendations for metal buildings, the board decided not to change the ordinance regarding metal buildings. The only recommendation Allen requested was a cap on the height of the building. Multiple board members and one person from the public disagreed with any change. Trustee Mike Martin stated, I don't see anything wrong with metal buildings because they look nice. Board member Jeff Powers added, there are a lot of those sheds put up that have better siding than some of the houses in town. And this is under the heading of security cameras. After property damage to the park, the village is installing security cameras in hopes to deter individuals. The village approved the purchase of security cameras with Wareham, pending agreement with the school district for housing the hardware or another location if the district does not approve. The cameras will be 1080 HD, and the DVR collecting the footage will hold up to 45 days of footage. Two TIF agreements were approved by the board Monday evening. Both Judy's Kitchen and the Depot will receive $10,000 with 50% of the sum paid now and 50% on the anniversary date. Also on page A3, we have this article. It's under the banner of City of Monticello. The headline reads, PZB recommends housing complex in Monticello. Concern was shown over parking planned for a 46-unit housing complex proposed for Monticello, but the City Planning and Zoning Board voted 4-1 on January 21st to recommend an amendment to permits that were approved for the project last year. If the City Council concurs, construction will begin in March or April and take 12 to 14 months to complete, according to developers. MVAH Partners first came to the City Council in January of 2019 for a conditional use permit for senior housing planned for the current Monticello Bowls site at 1412 North Market Street. The permit, along with a variance allowing less parking than spelled out in zoning code, was approved. At the more recent session, the PZB discussed an amendment allowing the complex to be open to those of all ages. MVAH spokesman Hume Ahn said that change is aimed at making the project more amenable to federal funding after application requirements were changed. The physical design has not changed, noting it will still include 35 one-bedroom units and 11 two-bedroom units. Also unchanged is a total of 58 parking places. That's less than the 92 required by local zoning law, but more than the 46 recommended by a parking study commissioned by MVAH. He added that while the new application procedures automatically deduct 14 points from total scores if a development targets seniors only, he thought the Monticello units would still attract tenants 55 years or older. We still plan on marketing this to a senior population as well as to others, and we feel this would be a good candidate because it has that elevator, so it is accessible. It also has building amenities that would be useful to a senior population. But some express concern that opening the project up to those of all ages could increase the parking requirements at a site where on-street parking is not possible, since it would be along Route 105. I am concerned about the parking. I feel like when we approved it the first time, we talked a lot about parking. I felt like if it were seniors in that spot, they likely wouldn't have more than one car, said PZB member Amber Gribble, who voted no on the amended permit. I feel like when we open it up, I feel like the building might need more than one spot per unit. Adjacent property owner Steve Dunn of Overdone Service was afraid his wide-open lot would attract overflow parking from the housing development, possibly blocking delivery vehicles. Our property is directly adjacent to it, and it's a wide-open parking lot we use to move around large trailers with. People are going to want to park there, and we're going to not want them to park there, said Dunn. Steve Schreffler agreed, adding his belief there is a good reason why zoning codes require two parking places per unit in housing projects. Ahn said the 58 spaces proposed is more than recommended by the parking study conducted by Sam Swartz International Parking and Traffic Consultancy, which, based on transportation engineer guidelines, estimated 46 spaces would be needed at peak capacity. He added that a majority of the units are one-bedroom units. The MVAH spokesman also noted that there would be two full-time employees on site since it opens, who could monitor parking issues. After discussion, PZB members voted to recommend approval of the amendment to the City Council, which was set to consider it on January 27th. If developed, the housing would be restricted to those below a certain income level, which Ahn said is generally 60% of the median income for that area. The project would generate about 30 to 40 temporary jobs during construction, with the two permanent jobs after completion. One-bedroom units would total around 600 square feet, with two-bedroom floor plans of about 900 square feet. MVAH is also pursuing construction funding from the Illinois Housing Development Authority, which funnels federal funding to state housing projects. And finally for today, under the banner of Illini Prairie Conference Football, we have an article headlined, STM to join Eight-Man Football League in 2020. The Illinois Eight-Man Football Association on Monday confirmed St. Thomas More as its newest member, capping what Sabres coach Nathan Watson described as a wild 2 weeks leading up to the moment. Watson had brought up the eight-man option to his assistant coaches on January 10th, addressed players and parents on January 12th, and made a presentation to the principals on the 13th of January. The process accelerated rapidly, in part so remaining football teams in the Illini Prairie Conference could more easily reschedule games should STM make the move. Watson was hopeful the district system would level the playing field for the relatively short-handed Sabres. Now he feels his program will be just one of several turning to the eight-man solution in the near future. 16 schools participated in the Illinois Eight-Man Association in 2019. This has been the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.